Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today we're talking about global economic conditions. Good morning, Esther. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great, Eric. I'm actually not doing super great, but I'll be getting back to great. I had a flu last week and I'm just coming back from it.
Yeah, that's no bueno. Nobody likes that.
No bueno. No bueno. Muy malo.
All right. We are talking about global economic conditions. This is a heavy topic here today.
Can you just hear the radios clicking off right now? No,
I hear people cheering. They're like, oh boy, we get to talk about global economic. Anyway, so the thing is that people do hear about it, right? They hear about it in the media. They hear about it, you know, around the water cooler, so to speak. Yeah. And there's good information out there and there's bad information out there. But basically what we're kind of hearing, a theme is that the global economic conditions are weaker as now as compared to this time last year. And so investors, they naturally worry. Should they worry is the question.
And I am going to come out, maybe this will not surprise you, but I will say, no, don't be worried, because it was forecast that it was likely to be weaker in 2019 because we had the huge fiscal stimulus of the corporate tax cut in 2018. And that was a huge driver to giving corporations more profits. You know, for you and me, if our taxes go down, then we have more money to put to work in other ways. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way for corporations. When the cost of their taxes dropped because of the change in tax law, well, their profits went up and the market anticipated that. And their stock prices were reflective of that through 2018, even though we had the very difficult fourth quarter of 2018 with a lot of downward pressure on the stock market or a lot of down. But yeah, it was really anticipated moving into 2019 that without that, things would slow.
Okay, so how does that affect us as just an average investor?
As an average investor, what is being talked about is that, is again, this is about setting expectations. We're in the 11th year of an economic expansion. So since it's amazing to think that it's that long ago since the Great Recession, it still feels very real, doesn't it? I mean, for those of us that lived through it and experienced it, it was a very visceral experience. So it doesn't seem like it's more than a decade ago now, but it is. We're in the 11th year of an economic expansion. And because of that, and because there isn't further fiscal stimulus on the horizon, like more tax cuts or anything like that, I would say that the average investor should just proceed, but proceed cautiously. And by that, I mean that it doesn't mean that we have to head for the hills when global conditions start to slow. And one should take, I would think, this is always funny because it's a bit of a two-edged sword. The Federal Reserve in March moved to say that they weren't planning on any interest rate hikes in 2019, and they left everything unchanged. And even 6 months ago, there was a lot of concern in the press about the Fed increasing interest rates, and the administration was concerned about it and expressed a lot of concern about the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, and were they being too aggressive at raising rates? And that was one of the things that triggered the decline in the fourth quarter of 2018. And now the Federal Reserve is coming out and saying, you know, we're not seeing enough economic growth to really warrant increasing interest rates. And when I say it's a double-edged sword, most of us like to hear about continued economic growth because it can be a bit disheartening to hear that we're not growing very fast. And yet on the flip side of that, things like interest rate increases, which does create more stock market volatility. It does make things for the average investor, like car loans and mortgages, be more expensive. That there's a ripple effect that creates that. So with that, one can also think, oh, okay, well, I won't have, if I'm saving right now to buy a house, I won't have to worry about mortgage rates going up greatly this year if I'm looking to buy a house next year. So that's why I say proceed, keep with your plans, but just proceed cautiously. Don't, in my world of looking at clients' plans, don't make large assumptions of what your stock investments will make for you this year. Mm-hmm. The thought is probably single digits, something like that. But don't be discouraged if that's what you get, because that's what's expected.
Yeah, and it's always been interesting to me that the economy is very reactionary, right? I mean, the economy reacts to things. So news, rumors of news, the economy is always reacting to that. And that's, like you said, the downward turn in the fourth quarter, a lot of that was due to the reaction of announcements and a reaction of news that's happening. But yet as investors, we're told not to be reactionary, right? We can't be reactionary because our reactions are really based on emotions a lot of times. And so we have to be proactive. And that's exactly what you're talking about, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. is being mm-hmm. able to say, just plan and, plan for not a huge return this year, but still plan and plan for the positive.
Yeah. And just it's really true. And that I would say the markets, the hard thing about making decisions, we all know, okay, you're invested in the stock market typically not to do something next year with the money. It's typically for a much longer time horizon. And really, we counsel people, assume it's 10 years that you have that money in the stock market before you need it. Mm-hmm. That's really hard for the brain to capture, just 10 years of having money set aside. So often people can swallow 5 years minimum at least, but really the rule of thumb should be 10 years. So if anything, it's just adding to positions right now or just holding where one is at. When we start to make a decision about selling out of the stock market, i.e. say in the fourth quarter of 2018 where things were coming down and that made people nervous, mm-hmm. then what happened is it's so hard to predict when the up will be. So all through the first quarter of 2019, basically all that money was just about made up. And if one had sold, then one wasn't there for the rally mm-hmm. in the return. So it is just a very difficult game to play. And one can't control. I mean, the domestic economy is growing more slowly. That is just what is happening. We don't see the fiscal stimulus moving forward. So there's nothing that's really going to stimulate corporate earnings, which is one of the main things that the stock market is fueled by, mm-hmm. is how do companies do? Oh, they did great. Great. Let's keep paying them the price that we're paying them. But there's nothing really fueling the next push. But on the flip side, the next word that comes up is what? The recession mm-hmm. word. That is, oh my gosh, do we see that on the horizon? And we're not seeing that as a looming risk, because if you look at areas of the economy, and again, people can snooze out when they hear about economy, but it's really you and me. You and me are the ones supporting this economy. It's an mm-hmm. almost 70% consumer-driven economy. So it's the things that you and I buy and our families buy that really create the profitability for these companies. So in these areas like auto sales, housing, corporate capital spending, and looking at inventories, if you think of, say, inventories of product, iPhones, washing machines, refrigerators, clothing, anything, they're not seeing any area as being excessive or, in other ways, vulnerable to a downturn. So, for example, if you remember, the tech bubble in moving up through the late 90s, everything tech was seen as golden. Nothing could go wrong. And then the housing in 2008 and what was happening there with people flipping housing, moving a lot, having multiple homes. We're not seeing anything that frothy at all, whether we compare it to 2000 or 2008. So there's no trends that are indicating this flashing red light for recession. Mm-hmm. And with that, Recession is a normal part of what happens in any economic cycle. It's just part of what's been going on for hundreds of years in economies. We have just not had any recession for 11 years. And so we get out of the habit, I suppose. And especially because the last one was so, so disastrous. I mean, it was just so scary and challenging. Mm-hmm. So again, we can make the association that recession is going to be what it was in 2008-9, but you know, a slowing beyond a certain point could be recessionary, but nobody is seeing that level of even slowing, and nobody is making any comparison on the horizon to what happened in the global economic crisis of 2008-9.
Even smaller recessions, I mean, as far as how the markets go, it's pretty cyclical, correct? Is it about every 10 years that you kind of see that reset happen?
I don't think it's every 10 years, because we had the recession in the early 2000s, and then we had the one in the mid 2000s. That was, again, that was brought up by all the, you know, the subprime mortgage lending, mm-hmm. and all of that that was going on. So I hesitate to say things like every 10 years.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think it's on schedule, but like you said,
it is cyclical. It is to be expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what you're saying is, put down my shovel. I don't have to dig and build my bunker quite yet. No. So, but if everybody does build a bunker, then there's going to be a rush on shovels and canned food, which then stimulates the economy, right?
Well, that's the other thing too. That is the silver lining, I would say, of recessions is in your example, yes, shovels and maybe concrete would go up in price, but other things like vacations would drop in price because nobody's thinking of going on vacation. So that's a good time to take advantage of lower prices for travel or to purchase your next vehicle.
That's true. But because if I could build a bunker in the Bahamas, I mean, if I had a choice of where to build my bunker, that might be it. So
wouldn't that be sad? You'd go all the way to Bahamas and then you'd be underground.
This is true. Yeah, this is very, that's a good point. See, now you popped my bubble. There we go. All right. So, I mean, when we look at the tech spending and housing and those examples, and you're saying there's really nothing on the horizon that's showing us that type. Right.
No.
What do we need to be looking for?
Well, one of the things is what the Federal Reserve is doing. Mm-hmm. They're basically being assessed right now as being quite conservative in their approach of interest rates. And actually, they've been assessed that way all along, that since the Great Recession, the Federal Reserve has been loath to raise interest rates and waited for quite a long time before they started to increase rates. And with that, I mean, they're always looking for what's called, you may have heard this phrase, a soft landing. Mm-hmm. So, and that is tied to the fact that economies do move in cycles. And so there will be periods of expansion. There will be periods of contraction or recession. And that the Federal Reserve will help us make that as soft a landing into the difficult times as possible. Mm-hmm. And they are being lauded right now that they are working on this soft landing. The fact that they have broadcast that they're not planning to raise interest rates this year, that they're thinking into 2020, maybe one interest rate increase. That's broadcasting a lot to consumers and companies overall, what they can expect. One of the difficult things going on right now is that we have the challenges of the ongoing trade war and trade challenges with China. Mm-hmm. So we see that impacted overseas, you know, countries like Germany and Taiwan, Korea, they're all what are known as exporting powerhouses. They manufacture and they export, manufacture and they export. And it's really impacting their investment and investment, not just here in the US, but investment around the world due to the trade negotiations with China being a big question mark. And the challenge with that is it can be self-fulfilling in terms of recessionary because it can cause businesses to hold back. They're not ready to make, you know, if you're a factory owner and if you're a manufacturer and you're thinking, okay, I need to expand, I think, production, but should I expand in such a way that China's involved? Or should I move it to a completely other country like Vietnam? I mean, that's a huge decision to make. And because the negotiations are uncertain, it's causing businesses to hold back. Mm-hmm. And when that's one of the challenges with consumers, with us as well, whether we're small business owners like you and me, or just, you know, employed, but not feeling confident in their own company's ability to grow moving forward, it can cause consumers to hold back, also hold back purchasing. And me with my financial planner hat on, I don't always think that that's such a bad idea, because what I've seen over the years can cause people the biggest harm financially over time is just not having enough reserves. So I never think that saving is a bad thing. It's not good for the economy because it doesn't put those dollars to work. But I think another thing that, again, the average investor can do is just during concerns. I mean, this is a great opportunity because there's concern about recession. I don't think that that's in the near term. Economists aren't seeing that either. And this is a good opportunity, though, to say, okay, let me take a look at how I'm structured for my own financial house in terms of cash reserves and savings. What would I do if I didn't have income or my income dropped off for a period of 3 or 6 or 9 months? Mm-hmm. Where can I go? What's my level of debt? Can I take advantage of the fact that I am employed to cut down my level of debt and really look at my overall, what about the other safety nets? You know, you talked about the bunker and all of that. Mm-hmm. In my world, the bunker are things like long-term care insurance, which we just did some podcasts on that a couple months ago. It's having that. That's a bunker. It is looking at life insurance, disability insurance. Those kinds of things are our bunkers. And so when I see too often, I think that money, quote unquote, free or available money goes into purchasing things as opposed to making sure financial foundations are set. That's what causes me to go, maybe take this time right now where there is a slowing in the economy to say, okay, but we're still moving forward, so we're still okay. But how am I set financially at the point when things do slow even more in the next several years for a period of time?
So out of curiosity, what would you say is a good amount for somebody to have in cash reserves or emergency fund or whatever you want to call it? What would you say is a good rule of thumb for folks?
That's a great question, and it really varies. As I have hesitated to put, when clients ask me that, which I get asked that a lot, I tend to go, I am more conservative there. I would rather have more cash on hand than less. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, I don't think the 3 months of expenses really works. I think when I grew up in my training, it was like 3 months of expenses or 6 months of expenses. I think that's a good starting point. If somebody is starting from zero, have 3 months of all your basic expenses covered. Start with that. When somebody's more established and they're in their 40s or 50s, I think it's more of a big round number at that point, as long as, again, their expenses aren't crazy out of control. Mm-hmm. But I find that people feel more confident if they have, say, $25,000, $50,000, $75,000, something like that. And then I get caught with clients on the flip side, because if you have too much, then you're not putting it to work for yourself and you're relying on a portfolio to give you a particular amount of return. But here we are again, coming back to this issue of a slowing economic environment where we think if one is 100% invested in stocks, which very few people are, the forecast this year is maybe you'd get 6%, 7% return on that portfolio. Most people are in a mix. And if one is weighted a lot more towards cash, then that's going to bring the overall return down. So still, I will tell you, I don't win those arguments a lot with those clients who just say, you know what, I feel most comfortable having $200,000, $300,000, that's where I'm at. And I do find with my single women that that is more typical and than for my couples or my single male clients. So it's interesting. I think one of the things, I was just at a conference a couple weeks ago with my financial transitionist group, and a speaker was there who was a woman who had been married to a prominent gentleman in the business world. And she talked a lot about how, even though she has an MBA, she is a working woman. She is smart and was able to lead different business entities for them, that whenever she met with the advisors, financial advisors with him, they completely shut her down. And they only would pay attention to what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the type of thing when you're talking, I'll bring this all back to the cash reserves. But when a woman says to me, you know, I'm just more comfortable with this amount in this way, I listen to what she says. It's her money and it's her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say, okay, we will do that. And then this is the impact that having that will have on this side. You know, how are you about that? And typically they're like, you know, I'm just more comfortable with these reserves. So, okay. The one thing with interest rates going up the way that they have since the recession, at least now we're earning some money on those reserves, a couple percent.
Yeah. Yeah. And the biggest thing is that the way I look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're putting money into an account, savings account, let's just call it a savings account, very mm-hmm. simple. When you're putting money in there, it's almost as though you're buying less stress, right? If your stress is at 100 and you're putting cash in there, okay, I'm at 10,000, my stress is now at 90. I'm at 20,000, my stress is at, you know, 70. Right. And if I hit 100,000 and my stress is down at like 10% stressed out, and that's where I'm okay living, then that seems to be the amount for me, right? Because I don't want anybody feeling like I just don't have enough just in case something happens. I mean, we always have those fears or those concerns, and we don't want those to feed our everyday life. But if we can do something to alleviate that, I think it's okay. And so I appreciate the fact that you do listen to your clients, and especially the women that are out there, because that is something in the industry that has been fought for years and years and years, is that a husband and wife can go in and the advisor is almost always talking to the husband, eye contact with the husband, you know, taking their consideration over the wife's. And it's a trend that needs to end today. I mean, it needed to end 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It just hasn't. So I'm glad that you do that, because if you're listening, then you're able to help them manage that stress level and get that down.
Yeah. I mean, nobody going through what I have gone through in my life and losing my husband, I know that personally, I maintain a higher level of cash reserves myself.
Mm-hmm.
And also being self-employed, you just,
absolutely.
I can appreciate, this is where I feel most comfortable. So, okay.
Yeah.
And I know I've had that conversation with my financial planner as well. In the last year or two, she was encouraging me, why don't I just pay off my house now and just call it good? And I could do that. But for me, I just thought, you know, if I need it for the business or something else, I want to have it available and accessible.
Yeah.
And I don't have children. There's, you know, and my interest rate is very low on the mortgage. So it just was more valuable to me than the savings of that interest
mm-hmm.
rate on the mortgage. And actually, as it turns out, this year, my mom, who will be 95 this month in May,
all right,
she needs more help and more care. And I'm glad that I have the resources to do that. So
nice.
One never knows what will come up to call on one's attention.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've brought up a lot of different things on this podcast. I know we're getting low on time, but for anybody who's listening to this right now and something has sparked and then now they have some concerns, or they're like, wait a second, maybe I don't have enough in cash reserves, or maybe I have too much and I'm losing out on other opportunities, mm-hmm. or this talk of recession does have me a little concerned. I want to make sure all my ducks are in a row. What does the individual investor need to do at that point?
First of all, reach out to your advisor if you're concerned at all. It's so important that your advisor knows what is on your mind and what might be troubling you. And when you meet with the advisor, we always talk about goals and time horizons, which I think for a client on the other side, that's still sort of mumble jumbo speak for us. I mean, yes, we know what goals mean and we know what time horizons mean. But mm-hmm. what I mean when I'm the advisor, I want to find out about that is, let's just talk about what your plans are for this money. When we put it into place, the way it is, it was basically to provide for your retirement and for your daughter's education. Has any of that changed? And I'm not surprised if things have changed because things change mm-hmm. in people's lives. So I'm looking to uncover anything new that may have come up. It could be a new relationship. It could be a new job, a change in, even though that doesn't change my retirement, but what's going on with the new job? So just listen to what the client is saying. But so when you talked with your advisor, I'm speaking to you clients out there, make sure you're letting them know everything that's on your mind. If you're not comfortable doing that, if you're in a situation, and I really hope that if for the single women out there, or even the married women who are out there, that you are being heard, you are listened mm-hmm. to, your money is really important. This is your life. So if you don't feel like your input is being taken seriously, it's so important to me. I'd rather someone be invested in such a way that they can sleep at night, or as Eric, you were talking, that the stress level is down, mm-hmm. that's more important to me than taking on a portfolio that's too aggressive for them or one that they don't understand. So we have to control what we can. So look for somebody else. If, you know, ask your friends. The Financial Planning Association has a great Find a Planner search feature. Look around for someone and meet with them, because most advisors will meet with you at no cost and a complimentary meeting, and just see how well you're heard, you're listened to, you're attended to. It's important we can control what we can. We can't control the next recession or what Jerome Powell is going to do as head of Federal Reserve mm-hmm. or trade policy, but we can control how we invest, how long we leave it, how our financial house is stable or not, and what we can do to improve it.
Fantastic. Any closing thoughts for today?
No, I just always appreciate, and I've suggested this to clients before, is to listen to the economists. Don't worry too much about market pundits. Really listen to economists about what they're hearing about the fundamental bolts of our economy and what's happening. And typically they're a lot more reasoned and seasoned than the more media savvy mm-hmm. stock pundits who are, you know, trying to get eyeballs and ears and on them, and a lot more flashy.
Exactly.
The economy is just the nuts and bolts of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. Great advice. Thank you so much for your time today, Esther.
Well, Eric, it's always a pleasure to talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. And if you know somebody who needs to hear this message, maybe their stress level's really high, and maybe they've talked to you about, you know, we just don't know what's happening in the economy. We just don't know what's happening with this bubble that could possibly burst. Share this podcast with them. They need to have some reassurance that it's going to be okay. And again, thank you for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.